Today we're going to talk about communication in marriage and all the problems that were presented are typical problems that we face throughout our marriage. If you haven't faced them yet, then that's good. Be ready because you might face them in the future. First, we're going to start by defining what communication is. Communication is not just saying things, it's sending and receiving the message. Communication is perfect when the intent of the message sent is fully understood by the receiver. Communication should be honest, respectful, and spoken in love. So when it comes to communication, the Bible is full of verses about communication. I'm just going to list a few, and this is nothing, taban, compared to what's in the Bible. Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. In James 3, 8 through 10, but no man can tame the tongue. Communication is all about tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be. And of course, when it comes to communication, the book of Proverbs is full of wisdom and advice concerning communication. He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, and that usually happens during fights. But the tongue of the wise promotes health. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. A soft answer turns away wrath, and a harsh word stirs up anger. I think we should all write down those communication verses and put them around the house to remind ourselves how to communicate with our spouses and our children too. So like I said, communication is both speaking and listening. So what is listening? Listening is not the same as hearing. Listening means that when another person is speaking, you're not thinking about or rehearsing what your answer is, which is usually what we do. Listening is complete acceptance without judgment of what is being said or how it is said. And that's the hard part, because usually when the person in front of us is angry, we don't like their tone of voice, we don't like what they're saying, and that's not what listening is. We have to really listen to the feelings and to what the person is trying to tell us. Unfortunately, all the odds are against good listening, because there are so many barriers to listening. The first barrier is defensiveness. We hear something that we don't like, we hear an accusation and we want to respond and we become defensive. Or we don't like the tone of voice, we become defensive and we don't listen to what is being said. There is personal bias. When you're listening to someone, if you don't like their tone of voice, if they say some repetitive sounds, if there is a tone of sarcasm in their voice, if their voice is too low or too loud, and you don't like those things, you have a personal bias against them, that's going to be a barrier to listening to that person. Interrupting is one of the biggest barriers when we're talking to people. We think 5 times faster than speaking. So when someone's speaking, they're taking their time speaking while we're thinking so much faster than them. So we have all the answers ready and we're ready to interrupt. Research says that an average person takes 17 seconds to interject and interrupt during a discussion. We can't listen longer than 17 seconds without having our own idea to interject. Also, mental and physical overload. When we're tired, we can't really... When we're tired or juggling too many things in our head, we can't be listening to the person in front of us. And most parents can agree with this. when you're doing something, at least thinking about a problem in your head, and then your kid comes and talks to you, you pretend that you're listening, but you really don't hear anything they say. Bad timing also. If you're busy doing something, or if your spouse is doing something, or maybe they just came home from work, this is not the best time that he can listen to you or you can listen to him. Selective listening. We hear what we want to hear, and that's a big problem. We don't always hear everything that happens. This is why when there's a conflict between two people and they retell the story, it's usually the two accounts are very different sometimes. Why? Because we remember parts of the story. We don't remember the whole thing. Because we hear, we all have selective listening. We hear certain things of the story, we see certain things, and we overlook other things. So if you think that in a discussion you remember everything and you can recall everything in detail, you're wrong, because no one can do that. So how can I be a good listener? Number one, know that listening is the greatest gift that you can give to your spouse. And when you listen to your spouse, really listen to them, that means you're telling them that you value them, you love them, and you appreciate them, that they're important to you. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to learn to listen. It's something that we have to learn, because like I remember the barriers that we talked about, the odds are against us listening. In order to listen, you have to paraphrase what is being said. So the only time that you actually talk is in the service of understanding the person talking to you. It's not to say your opinion or your ideas or anything. Listening means you are giving their your attention and you're paraphrasing what they're saying or asking questions to clarify what they're saying. Show respect and validate. And we're going to talk about that later. But you can pretend that you're listening and you may not say anything or interrupt, but your body language can speak tons. If you just roll your eyes or if you look away when the person's speaking, that means you're not validating them and you're not listening to them. So in short, I cannot be a good communicator if I'm not a good listener. In order to be an attentive listener, you have to maintain eye contact. You have to lean slightly forward. When you're talking to someone, just your body language, by leaning forward, it shows that you're really listening. Nodding and saying, things like that, you don't just let the person speak, and you're not engaging with at least showing him that you're listening to him or her. Clarify by asking questions and paraphrase, like I said. And if you're doing something like watching TV or you have your phone in your hand or Facebook or something, move away from that distraction. Turn off the TV or mute it, put the phone down and look at the person when they're talking. So this is how to be a good listener. How can I be a good speaker? Number one, speak for yourself. Talk about your own thoughts. Don't ever talk about what you think the thoughts and motives of the person in front of you is, because there's no way you can tell. If you say that, well, I think you do, this is how you feel, or this is how you think, you're just guessing, and that's not right. Only they know what they're saying. So always talk about your own thoughts and feelings. Clarify and say what you mean. A lot of times we always say, well, if they love me, they should know how I feel. And that's not good enough. We should be clear. They're not gonna, don't play the guessing game. Just be clear and clarify what you want. When you're speaking about your feelings, use I statements instead of you. There's a big difference. When you say you make me mad or I feel mad, there's a huge difference. Because when you say you make me mad, you're accusing the person. You're attacking their character and their behavior. But if you say I, you're owning your feelings. I feel sad. I feel angry. And of course, choose when you're making requests, when you're asking for something, make requests, not demands. And the difference is when you're making a request, you introduce the element of choice. When you're making a demand, they have no choice. And that puts them on the defensive side. Choose the right time. In Proverbs, it says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. So the timing is the most important thing. When you're talking, pay attention to everything around you. The content of what we're saying is only 7% of the message. Do you know what the rest is? I know Abuna Benjamin talked about that last time. The components of any message, only 7% is what is actually being said. 38% is the tone, and 55% is the nonverbal. Exactly. For example, if we say the word ahlan, I can say ahlan, right? So I'm happy, smiling. The tone is happy, so I'm welcoming the person, right? Or I can say ahlan. So it's the same word, but the way I said it, I'm not welcoming the person. The body language is very sarcastic. So it's very important to pay attention to the tone and to your body language when you're talking, because only 7% is what's actually coming out of your mouth. I know Abuna James talked about the... Thank you so much. About communication of love and the love languages, so I'm not going to go into them. Know how to speak your spouse's love language. You all know about that, right? Okay. Just briefly, everyone understands love differently. So I can feel loved, for instance, if I hear nice words of affirmation from my husband. If he shows me that he appreciates me, I feel loved. My husband, on the other hand, may feel loved only if I do things for him. If I see him tired and I bring him a meal, or I tell him, you know what, I washed the car for you today, you don't have to worry about washing it. So if I do acts of service, he feels loved. Another person can only feel loved if you give them gifts. It doesn't have to be expensive gift, but they feel that you're thinking about them if you come home with a flower every other day, or a card, or a gift every now and then. That's their language of love. Another person will only feel loved if you hold their hands, if you give them enough hugs, and just show a lot of affection by physical touch. Another person will only feel loved if you actually spend quality time with them. So every one of us has a different love language. And this is not the topic of the discussion today, but it's a very important, it's so important to know what your spouse's love language, because if you do not speak their language, they will not feel loved. And this is why so many marriages, the husband will buy gifts for his wife all the time, and the wife is frustrated because she never feels appreciated. And he says, I buy her gifts, I come home with flowers every day, why is she not happy with me? Well, you never tell her how much you appreciate her. You never tell her that she looks nice or whatever. So it depends on your spouse's love language. Know what it is and speak it more than the other languages. We should actually speak all languages, but give more attention to your spouse's love language. This is a book by Gary Chapman, and it's called The Five Love Languages. It's translated in many languages, and it's a very good book. It's really worth reading. But actually, you know, we learned how to speak and we learned how to listen. Now we're going to talk about the negative communication patterns that we usually face in our marriage. Why they happen and how they happen. So there's escalation. If you remember the second message, it was the voice of the person saying that every time we talk about something, we end up fighting, and he says mean things, I say mean things, just because he says it, why don't I get to say it too? So escalation happens when both partners respond back and forth negatively to each other, continuing to get the conversation more and more hostile. This is when couples say hurtful things to each other. That's when Proverbs 12:18 comes very handy. Reckless words pierce like a sword. That usually happens during an escalation. One spouse says something hurtful and hits below the belt. The other spouse feels, well, that hurts so much, I'm going to have to say something to respond to that. And then the escalation happens and the fight happens, and we remember these things months down the road. Remember when you told me this, and remember when she said that, and we remember it, and it's very hard to forgive. So we have to know when escalation happens, it's very wise to put the brakes and de-escalate. And it's very simple to de-escalate, simply by softening your tone of voice, by calling for a timeout. So one partner needs to back off and de-escalate. Simply by validating your spouse, by acknowledging their point of view. It doesn't necessarily mean that you agree with it, but you acknowledge it. Soften your tone of voice, and right away, de-escalation happens. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. It takes practice and humility, because normally we would want to respond back. Normally we would want to say hurtful things, especially when we're hurt. So it does take a lot of humility and a lot of practice, and to really recognize escalation early on before it's too late. Do you know why we yell when we're angry? Has anyone heard the reason for this? I read somewhere that when we're angry, our hearts are distant from each other. So the angrier we are, the bigger the distance is, and the need to yell so that we can be heard. This is why when two people are so much in love, they whisper, because their hearts are so close to each other. I thought that was neat. Sometimes we think that hurtful words are meant during an escalation, and we say what's in your heart, it all comes out when you're angry. That's not necessarily true. Hurtful things are being said as a way of self-defense. So usually during escalation, what you're most focusing on is how to pierce and hurt the person in front of you rather than say things that you really mean to say. That's why people end up saying, well, let's get a divorce. I can't live with you anymore, when they actually never mean it and they would never even think about it. Again, it takes humility to put down your shield and choose to soften your tone and de-escalate the tension, diffuse the tension between you. Another way to de-escalate is by calling a timeout. When you see that things are starting to heat up, you can simply say, honey, this is not going anywhere. We need to take a time out and discuss this later. Because if we continue to discuss, we're going to say hurtful things to each other. And we've done this before, so let's not do it again. It's not avoiding the topic. It's just taking a time out to discuss it later. Maybe after dinner when we're not hungry. Maybe after you relax a little bit when you come home from work, not as soon as you come home from work. And during the timeout, when you call for a timeout, you need to set the time that you're going to talk so that you don't end up avoiding the subject altogether, because you do need to talk about it. So during the timeout, you need to pray. You need to gather your thoughts so you can say the words or say your feelings in a way that is not attacking your partner. So we talked about escalation. Next is invalidation. Validation is letting your spouse know that in so many ways that you understand him or her. So instead of attacking or ignoring your spouse's point of view, you try to see it from their point of view, from their perspective. It's basically putting yourself in their shoes. So the example that Sameh was talking about, the husband that was complaining that he was tired and he came home from work, if she had put herself in his shoes and thought about how tired he is, things would have been different. If he would have put himself in her shoes and thought about how tired she must have been dealing with the kids all day, cooking and cleaning and running errands, things would have been different. So even though they're both tired, just acknowledging that the other person is tired too, that's validation. When you don't validate, it belittles and disregards your spouse's feelings. It hurts and it leads to covering up. They don't share what their feeling is anymore because you know they know that you will make fun of them. You will not listen to what they're feeling or what they're saying. So they decide not to share with you anymore. By validation, you're showing respect to your spouse. And with validation, you don't necessarily have to agree. The husband doesn't have to agree that his wife's job is harder than him. All he has to do is realize that she has a hard job too, or at least she perceives it as a hard job. So a lot of people think that they should only validate when they agree with the spouse, and that's not true. You validate their feeling. You validate how they feel, not necessarily why they feel it. So I'm just imagining what the discussion was between the husband and wife in that problem that Sameh presented to us. So Eve is saying, you come home and right away you want dinner. Adam is saying, at the end of the day, I'm tired and I just want to unwind. So he's saying something, right? She responds, and I've been home all day with the kids. Can you tell that she heard what he said? She didn't hear a word he said. She's talking about herself. And I've been home all day with the kids, and I've had it up to here, errands all day, no time for myself, and I look forward to your coming home so I can get a little relief. He doesn't respond to what she's saying, and he says, I want to be left alone for a few minutes. I'd appreciate a little peace and quiet when I walk in the door. Then she responds and says, I want someone to take care of me for a change. I'd like some adult conversation. Can you see how they're talking parallel to each other and not really answering each other? Adam says, I'd like a little concern or affection or a sense that you're glad to see me. She responds, I want to feel that my husband will be interested in me, in my thoughts, or find me attractive, or do something special for me. He responds, I come home after a lot of tension all day, and I want to relax. A home is a place you can unwind, and I want my wife to be interested in me and ask me how my day was. She responds, I'd like a little romance, like having you bring me flowers or tell me I look nice. He responds, the meal is important to me. It makes me feel taken care of, and it's the one time we are together as a family. Are they talking to each other? They're not listening to anything that any of them are saying. Let's hear the same exact conversation with a little bit of validation, just to show you what validation is. And the validation statements are the ones in red. You come home and right away you want dinner. I can see how that would make you, how that would feel like just another demand in a long list you've had to deal with all day. Me, at the end of a long day, usually I'm tired and I just want to unwind. He still said what he wanted, but he validated her point of view. She responds, I know that you've had a hard day on your feet with all that tension. And I've been home all day with the kids, and I've had it up to here. Errands all day. No time for myself, and I look forward to your coming home so I can get a little relief. So he says, I've been looking forward to seeing you too, but I tell you the truth, I want to be left alone for a few minutes. I'd appreciate a little peace and quiet when I walk in the door. So the conversation didn't change much except for a little bit of validation from both of them. So it tones down, it makes them not feel defensive, it doesn't make them feel belittled or angry at the end of the conversation. So she responds and says, you need a little breathing room to unwind when you first walk in. That's validation. And here I am thinking I want someone to take care of me for a change instead of me doing for someone else all day long. And maybe having some adult conversation. Maybe you can do that once you've had a little breathing room, a chance to unwind. So you can tell that they've listened to each other. And so on, the conversation goes where they're validating each other. And in the end, Eve says, we are both needy at the end of the day. Yeah, you know the meal is important to me. Of course he wants to eat. So do you see the difference between the two conversations and what validation does to the conversation? So we talked about escalation, we talked about invalidation, and now we're going to talk about negative interpretations. This was the third email. The wife that wanted to go out of town to visit her family, and the husband thought that it's not right for the budget. Negative interpretation occurs when one partner consistently believes that the motives of the other are more negative than is really the case. It's destructive, and it creates a sense of hopelessness because she already made up her mind that the husband hates her family. So anything he says is going to prove that he hates her family. This is called confirmation bias. Once we have an opinion about something, or we think that something is true, we look for all evidence to prove that we are correct. So the evidence that she looked for is she said that she misses her family and she wants to go, and he said, sorry, we cannot go. She did not hear the rest of it because of the budget, because she already has the preconceived idea that he doesn't like her family. And it could be something that happened long ago during their engagement period or something, and she still remembers it till now. And she still thinks that he does not love her family. So it's very hard to change the negative interpretation. Actually, in that example, the husband does like the family. And if she just would stop and think about the facts that he's presenting to her, it does make a lot of sense. They do not have money in the bank. They would have to put the tickets on the credit card. It would increase their debt and create a lot of problems. But she didn't listen because of her preconceived idea and the negative interpretation. So this will happen a lot in our marriages. We will blame our spouses with something that is not true. If you find yourself doing this, stop and try to find evidence to the contrary. Know that it's natural that you're going to try to prove your point, that to prove that you're right about your spouse. When in reality, what you need to do is go against that natural tendency and try to prove him right. Try to find excuses for him and give him the benefit of the doubt. So push yourself to find evidence to the contrary. The last one is withdrawal and avoidance. And this is when we, if you remember the second one, when she was fighting with her husband all the time, and every time they fight, it escalates into a big fight. They both decided that they're not going to talk to each other. They're not going to. What's the point? If we start talking about anything, it's going to turn into a fight. So usually one partner will decide not to fight anymore and will withdraw, while the other one will continue to try to open different subjects and discuss different subjects. And that, of course, frustrates the one that is trying to talk because the other one doesn't want to talk anymore. And there is what's called stonewalling. You try to talk to your spouse and he or she just does not want to discuss the topic anymore. Of course, that's not healthy. What's even not healthier is the silence technique. What's wrong? Nothing. You look upset. No, I'm not. And there's no way for him to know what's wrong because you just don't want to talk about it, because you know that if you talk about it, you're either going to fight or he's going to invalidate you, and you're going to feel more upset after the discussion than before. This is why it's very important that when we're solving a problem, that we handle the problem as a team. Because it's not a matter of if you're going to fight. Everybody has conflicts in their marriage. So it's how you handle those conflicts and how you treat it as a team. You're not on opposite sides. So the enemy is the problem, not your spouse. Learn to be a good listener, learn to be a good communicator, and cooperate with each other. And the most important thing is to deal with one problem at a time. I know women are not very good with this because we remember things from the past. So usually when when we face a problem, let's deal with this one problem and let's not bring up problems in the past. And husbands, remind your wives, you know, this is not the time to talk about this. Let's just deal with this one issue. And when you're reminded, do it. When we're dealing with problems, we need to reach a compromise. This is our goal. It's not to win the argument. It's to end up with a win-win situation, not a win-lose. Because win-lose is not good. In Philippians 2:4, let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. This is what compromise is all about. If you get your way all the time, one of you is not happy. So points to think about is love is a choice and a decision. It's not a feeling. Take responsibility for your behavior. You cannot change your spouse. You can only change yourself. This is why I love the movie Fireproof. Have you all seen Fireproof? No? Okay. Well, if you haven't seen it, it's a great movie to watch. Basically, you need to concentrate on yourself, on the changes that you need to make in yourself before you can change your spouse, because no one can change anyone. You can only change yourself. So take responsibility for your behavior even when your spouse doesn't seem to want to get along or to cooperate. Still do the right thing yourself and good things will happen in return. Watch your negative mental habits. We are what we think. So if you spend the whole day thinking about how terrible your spouse is, how inconsiderate he is, how angry he gets all the time, all the negative things in your mind, this is what you will deal with when you first see your spouse, when he comes home from work or she comes home from work. So watch your mental thoughts. Always think positive. Always dwell on the good characters. Everybody has good and bad characters. Just think more and give more weight to the good characters that your spouse have and put less weight on the bad characters or the bad qualities. We always say when someone feels upset or sad to count their blessings. That's what we need to do with our spouses all the time. Count their good qualities and dwell on them. The ratio of positive to negative in your relationship should always be 5-1. So you're going to complain about something, think about 5 positive things before you say the 1 negative thing that you're going to complain about. Chances are, if you can come up in your mind with 5 positive things, you won't think much of the negative thing that you're going to talk about. It's not going to give it as much weight. So finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good rapport, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Meditate on these things with your spouse. And think. Before you speak, think. What you're going to say, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? If it's not, then don't say it. We cannot say everything we feel like saying and end up with a healthy marriage. We have to put a rein on our tongue and think before we speak. And remember, oh, you want it? Love never fails. Any questions? حلينا كل المشاكل. You have a question? في ميكروفون لورا. Stonewalling. If you take care of the invalidation and the escalation, there won't be much stonewalling. Okay, she's asking, how do you get around stonewalling? Stonewalling is when one person wants to discuss a topic and the other person just refuses to discuss it. They either leave the room or they pretend that they're doing something. They're really not listening. They're not discussing the topic and they refuse to. The best thing to do it is work on the other things. There is a reason for stonewalling. It's either there's a lot of invalidation in the marriage, there's a lot of negative interpretation, or there's a lot of hostility. And this is why they end up stonewalling.
How to find compromise in a deadlock situation?
How to find compromise in deadlock situation? Call Abuna. No, I'm just kidding. Can you give me an example? There should always be a way to compromise. The only reason that there would be a deadlock is if both spouses are unwilling to compromise. You have to meet halfway. You have to be willing not to win it or have it your way. Fully. It takes humility. If you're in the marriage trying to win, trying to be the one in power, whether you're a man or a wife, because it goes both ways, you will never have a happy marriage. Even if your husband or wife listens to you all the time and does what you want, it's not a happy marriage.
Yeah, thanks, Marmar. But just to add to it, Yani, there are some times where it's a question has a yes or a no answer, right? There's no really anything in between, right? So a compromise is either accept or not accept, you know? So how do you handle stuff like that?
For example, Masa, if we talk about the example about going to visit her family, the compromise would be, yes, we can visit, but not right now. We have to save up. We have to maybe get a part-time job. You find the compromise where we're not going to wait until next year for you to visit your family, but maybe we can do it in 3 or 4 months if we cut down on these expenses. So you do reach a compromise in this way. So yes, it's a yes or no. No, we're not going. Yes, we're going. But in the end, they ended up going halfway down the line.
That probably works 95% of the time.
I can't hear you.
That probably works most of the time, but there are some things that are, like he was saying, black or white. Like, for example, the husband or the wife says, we're not going to go to church at all, again, ever. Okay, that's a black, you know, that's a yes or a no. There's no compromise there. There's a right answer of yes, we're going to go to church, and there's a wrong answer of we're not going to church. So in a situation like this, you cannot compromise.
Yes, of course. Situations like this, you can't compromise. And the wife has to accept the leadership of her husband in certain things. But what if the husband says we're not going to church? That's another issue. That's something that when it comes to God, there is no compromise. But in other issues, tougher subjects where there's absolutely no way to compromise, there has to be an agreement that the leadership is in the husband. Don't hate me, women, please. Because, I mean, this is how God put it, that the husband is in charge and he is the leader. We do give our opinions, we do give our input, and we try to reach a compromise, but when it comes to a deadlock and important issues where there is no way, we have to accept their leadership, because it's all going to go back on their head once we go up to heaven.
So if the husband says we're not going to go to church.
No, not when it comes to God, I said. Okay. No compromise when it comes to God. If the husband says we're going to cheat on taxes or we're not going to go to church or we're going to do anything that is not okay with God, there's no compromise there, no.
So in that case, you do not have to follow the leadership because the leadership is flawed.
I'm talking about follow the leadership in other things like which school the kids go to, things like daily decisions. But when it comes to morals and value, you know that you have to keep your morality, of course.
I was thinking, when I feel that there will be a fight, can I move away or just change wherever we are or move away from his face? Or can I do this or I have to be in front of him?
It's very good that you move away, but not in a way to make him angrier. You can say, you know, call a timeout, like I said earlier. Now, this is not a good time to talk. I see you're angry, and I'm getting angrier too. So let's talk about this after dinner. Let's talk about this in an hour after we both calm down.
But I should not leave, like, I have...
No, because leaving, that would be avoiding. So you have to either soften the tone and start validating, you know, diffuse the tension, and then decide to talk about it later. Thank you.
Case number three. The case when he came tired from work, and she was also... Okay. Is it just enough to say good words and then come back again and insist on why I was insisting on, like, the example here showed somebody who was insisting on having some rest because he's tired from work. And then the positive slide, the next one was talking about saying good things about her, his wife, and then affirming that she's tired like him. And then he excused her again to go and have some rest. I think this is not just enough.
That's a good question. So, at the beginning, they were talking parallel to each other. Everyone is stating their problem, and they're not listening. Okay, the problem still exists. She's tired, and he's tired. And at the end, they realize that they're both tired. Okay, so, yes, it did help the fact that she understands. Okay, for instance, I'll give you a personal example. My husband is a doctor, so he sees a lot of things, a lot of accidents and stuff, and he's very cautious about everything. I have a 15-year-old. He wants to go on a bike ride, and Ahmed is like, no, you can't cross streets. I'm like, he's 15. He can cross streets. When I used to tell him that, we used to get into arguments. We try not to do it in front of the kids, but we got into arguments. When I prepared this discussion, I started changing things, and I said, well, you know, I understand it's because you see so many accidents at work and everything, but, you know, we have to let go of our fears and just depend on God, and he's growing, and we have to let him go on bike rides. That made a huge difference, just saying that I understand where you're coming from. Even though I said the same thing, and he said the same thing, just the fact that I validated his feelings changed the whole conversation from being both angry to I understand where he's coming from. And he understands where I'm coming from, that it's time for us to let go and let him be independent and stuff like that. So just validating their point of view makes a huge difference in the conversation. Does that make sense? Try it works. Okay. Allah salli.